Okay, folks, let me say this with my usual honesty before I trip over my tie. In all the world, there has never been such a successful presidency as mine. But before I am impeached, I have some bad news for you. Here comes the colonel.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a first, actually. Being introduced by a sitting president of the United States. Well, welcome back. The second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to hear back again from Dr. Daxuan Feng. We ran into him at a busy restaurant some weeks back and had a good conversation. He was giving us insights on what's going on in China. At the, if you listen to the first half hour, you heard Jeff Smith. He's going to be a speaker, remind you, at the IEEE Metricon conference that's going on October 26th at the Arlington Convention Center. You won't want to miss that. It's the 30th anniversary. I understand a surprise we're going to be getting that we can't even talk about yet, who's going to be at the conference. You can find more information on the Metricon conference at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. Right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. Rummage around in the coin jar just a minute for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Yes, yes, yes. Once again, we have awakened the spirit of the fountain. Who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all. For a price, that's the reason. Of course, we had to throw in the coins. All right. Oh, Spirit of the Fountain, here's an easy one for you. What country does Vichy water well up in? Vichy water. You should know all about the water, oh, Spirit of the Fountain. What country does Vichy water well up in?
I have given you my answer. And now you may...
Yes. I know. That was an easy one. An easy one for you, anyway. The country that Vichy water wells up in? If you said France?
Of course.
It was France. All right. Back to our program. If you've been listening for the past couple of weeks, you've noticed we've taken some clips from a breakfast that we had with Dr. Daxuan Feng with Macau University in China. And it was a great conversation, lasted a long time. We've been taking clips of that to give us some insights about China. And here's a little bit more from Dr. Daxuan Feng.
You know, all these, but you think about it, it's not the green people that is important, although it is very important. It's the fact that these great people all went to universities, and sit next to them were classmates who also learned the same knowledge as they did. Now, their classmates may not have created as great a work as these maestros, but they too, in their own diminutive way, contributed to the greatness of Renaissance. So therefore, the greatness of the Renaissance is the creation, the ubiquitous creation of universities. And within this large piece of area that you call Europe, these ideas fermented and lifted human out of ignorance.
Out of the Dark Ages. That's how they get out of the Dark Ages, because of the universities.
Absolutely. And it isn't just one or two persons. It's thousands and thousands of young people, men and women, that went through higher education. Now, we have new challenges now. We have challenges of global warming. We have new challenges of shortage of energy. All this. You know, Thomas Friedman said something quite remarkable recently. Oh, I don't know how recent, maybe a few years ago. He said, you know, you look at all universities today. Any university that's worth its salt, they all do global warming research. They all do water shortage research. He said, you know what? global is still warming. Shortage is still shortage. It hasn't reversed itself one iota. So what is the problem? The problem is that just like the Renaissance, where you needed a new way of thinking to live, you know, if you depend on old ways of thinking, we will still be thinking that the earth is the center and not the sun. You need someone to jump outside the thinking like Copernicus did. You need the thinking of Isaac Newton. You need the thinking of Francis Bacon to really jump Bacon, to jump out of this. You need the Renaissance to jump out of this. So what we need in the 21st century and beyond is new Renaissance. And we need a new Renaissance. We need people like the new Copernicus, the new Galileo, to take us out of the current mode of thinking and find new ways to solve our new dark ages.
So where are these people going to come from, these new thinkers?
These new thinkers will come from these universities when they're out in this one giant supercontinent with creating a new culture which will not just say a little bit of East in West or a little bit West in East, which is what it is, but really fuse them together and think of a new way. And universities, that's what I mean by the university new challenges and opportunities.
And this is going to happen no matter the mood of isolationism around the world. We see it in Germany. We see it all over the place. And right here in the United States, this is going to happen anyway.
I think there will have to happen anyway. In fact, I suspect that all the things that you talked about are economic isolation, but not cultural isolation. People are beginning, young people are now under, you know, I tell you a very interesting thing recently. I knew a pair of fantastically smart twins, both Indians. Now, you know that India and China for the last 40 years or 50 years have not been that friendly of each other.
No, in competition, quite frankly, haven't they?
Well, more than that. But anyway, the point is things are beginning to new political leaders are showing up in China that's talking about India and China must work together. Modi is also talking about that. You know, these two young, one is a faculty member at Indian Institute of Technology, Guwahati. One finishes PhD at Nanyang Technological University of Singapore. They both said that, I look at China, I see new opportunities, okay? I don't care what my government tells me. I find my career, I can find new career opportunities in China. Both actually landed in Chinese universities as faculty members.
Wow, fascinating.
And these are happening now. In fact, I just wrote an article about them. I said that this may be the watershed of a new era. And I think that with new transportation mode, and that's why I say, I was very fascinated by this piece of history. In 1961, I think, Kennedy one day at the U.S. Congress said, we're going to go to the moon in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You must remember that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, you must also remember that at that time, people say, you're nuts. We don't have the money, and we probably don't have the technology. But what did he do? He motivated the nation. He used his bully pulpit, is that what it's called?
Yeah, the bully pulpit.
The bully pulpit, as the president, he motivated the university by 1969. Shepard, was it? On the moon? Was it Shepard?
Armstrong.
Armstrong. Armstrong was on the moon.
Neil Armstrong, the first of them.
And he just died recently.
Yes.
Yeah. Neil Armstrong was on the moon. Okay? So I said, India today, I actually discussed this with many Indian friends and some Indian leadership, and they told me that, look, we realize China is growing. You know, China built 20,000 kilometers of high-speed rail in the last 16 years.
Yeah, you were telling me about that last time we were talking.
And China's economy is growing, you know, rapidly. You know, people say, oh, it's down to 6% now. And I told them, well, don't forget, the base is a lot larger. But anyway, so Indians said, we know that China is rising. And at some point, we have to face that competition. And to face that competition, we have to understand Chinese thinking. We have to understand Chinese ways and means. And how do we do that? We learn its culture and we learn its language. And then I think there was a minister who said, you know, we have a problem. Of the 1.2 billion people in India, less than 1,000 understand English and Chinese. That's called zero.
Yeah.
And in China, it's the same thing. Of the 3,500 universities, less than a handful have South Asia institutes of research, like zero. So I said that what China needs, the best challenge and opportunity, is that let's use the metaphor of the moon of Kennedy. The 21st century moon for China is what? India. And the 21st century India's moon is China. You need that kind of bully pulpit transformation. That's what I meant by challenge and opportunity.
All right, with all this facing us then, you do not see in the short run a trade war between the United States and China or Mexico or any of the other things, because we can't have a trade war and accomplish the things that you're envisioning.
I'm not going to predict a future. Who said that? I think future is very hard to predict because it is the future.
I think you're talking about Bayesian, back Father Bayesian, who said that you can try to predict the future, but you're going to change it constantly until it finally arrives, because you're going to learn all new things.
I still hope, and I could be naive, I still hope Trump is a businessman. He will know when it is not a good business, he wouldn't do it.
All right, tell me about your book. I want to hear about your book.
Okay. My book actually is very interesting. In 1995, gosh, 22 years ago, we were all young then, weren't we? I attended a talk in Philadelphia by, then I realized later he was my congressman. That's how naive I was. I didn't even know he was my congressman. Okay. He gave a talk in Philadelphia about the Rust Belt challenges, which Pennsylvania was. And one of the things that the Rust Belt had a problem was that the number of congressional representatives are dropping. I didn't realize that the number of congressmen in the U.S. Congress is fixed number. A gain somewhere else is one loss from somewhere else.
Well, now that would be has to do with apportionment and population.
So Arizona gains one, and somewhere in the Rust Belt will lose one.
But both, all states, no matter what size, get two senators.
Oh, yes, that's true. But congressmen, you lose. So he was saying that I think Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and Maryland combined together will lose 3 to 4 congressmen, whereas the Rust Belt will have 3 or 4 more. And when you lose that, you lose a lot of influence in the Congress. So he was saying, in 1995 was almost the beginning of the Internet. I mean, it was at its fledgling stage. He said, I heard of this thing called the Internet. Maybe we can use Internet to put the 4 states as a power together. His name was Congressman Kurt Weldon. He was then the Republican of the chairman of the Armed Services Committee. So I was very fascinated by that because I knew something about internet. I was doing research in astrophysics at that time, and I needed the internet to link to the supercomputer centers in Pittsburgh. So I learned things about that. So I wrote a little article about his speech. I was so touched by it. And then I put it on the internet, and somehow the speech was picked up by the Philadelphia Inquirer, and they published it. It's the first time I published anything in the newspaper. And then I didn't realize that as a congressman, he has staff members that comb the newspaper and see what people talk about their bosses. And somehow I got a call from him, and then, to make a long story short, eventually with him and I worked, I joined a company called SAIC for 4 years, Science Applications International Corporation, before returning back to the university. So that's how I started my writing career. I found myself drawn into writing things. You may have read some of the things I wrote. I find it fascinating because...
You love to write, I know that. I've not noticed that.
Because I find it tells me something about my life and the life of the person I interacted with. And I don't keep a diary, but I keep this sort of writing. It's de facto a diary, but in a much longer form. And since I don't write every day, I put more thoughts and thinking, the historical meaning, the implications about the future into that. So I've been writing for 20 years. And about 2 years ago, a book company said, you know, this is too worthy. You know, you're one of the few educators that you put education in a new limelight. And we think that instead of doing episodically, why don't we put it into a book? And so people can read it in one go and sort of appreciate your thinking. And perhaps learn something from it. So we did that, and eventually the book came out.
All right. Fascinating. Tell us the title of the book again.
The title of the book, and you can get it from Amazon, it's called edu.edu/renaissance:... something about the Globetrotters viewpoints or something like that.
I'll look it up, and I'll tell the listeners about it when we hear this
program.
It's about
300 pages. You can get it in ebook form. You can get it in soft cover form, or you can get it in hardcore cover form.
And, of course, this is your theory about education and about the Renaissance and about how the universities are going to bring about a whole new way of thinking.
My feeling is... You know, we are undergoing an interesting period of world history at the moment, and I think, in some sense, the Trump philosophy or the isolation philosophy is inevitable when the rich and poor became more and more separated. One of the greatest thing about United States as a country is, to me, it's not even democracy. It's the fact that ever since the Second World War, it's a country of middle class, where the middle class dominate the country. What does that mean? It means most people live fairly well. Now, not everyone was Rockefeller, but not everyone was dirt poor. But everyone was more or less living in a very decent manner, economically, culturally, and so on. But I sense that if you isolate yourself, one of the greatest reasons why U.S. became such an incredible powerhouse is because it welcomed the poor, the destitute of the world. You know, one of the most interesting outcome of the Vietnam War if there were ever one. I mean, I cannot think of anything good that came out of the Vietnam War. But there was one thing that came out of the Vietnam War. Remember, right after the Vietnam War ended, many, many Vietnamese paddled their little boats out of Vietnam. Now, think about it. Suppose you live in Houston, and there's some terrible situation in Houston, and you have to find the courage to paddle out into the Mexican,
Gulf of Mexico.
The Gulf of Mexico. It's scary, right?
Yeah.
Because it's, you're paddling out to the great, great big ocean. It's a very frightening thing. So, who are the people? Who are the people that paddle out? It's a self-selected group of people with tremendous cultural courage and intellectual ability to do so. And those were the people that came to the United States. You have de facto, you meaning us, I'm an American, de facto selected the best of the best of Vietnamese to come to the United States. And when you have the best of the best to come to the United States, how can that not benefit the United States?
Now, aren't we really attracting all over the world when we have our immigrants, the mines and the workers, and we're stealing we're accumulating the very brains of the entire world here in the United States.
Well, you know, in Silicon Valley, they talk about IT, and that's not integrated circuits. It's Indians and Chinese. So this idea there was Lee Kuan Yew. Have you heard of him?
No.
Lee Kuan Yew was the Singapore Prime Minister.
Okay.
Who took Singapore from a third world to a third world status. He just died last year. And I think he said something, but I couldn't find the source. But I hope someday someone will find me the source. But I remember he said the following. It's worth listening to. He said, ultimately, United States will triumph over China, not militarily, but in many ways. He said, you know why? Because when China looked for talents, they looked for them in the 1.4 billion people. When the U.S. looked for talents, they looked for it in the 7 billion people. Now, therefore, if U.S. now stop looking for talents in the 7 billion people and down to the 300 million people, it will be the day where the U.S. begin to downfall.
Breakfast at a busy restaurant with a very fascinating Dr. Dashuan Feng from Macau University. Right now, we're out of time. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Teaching is selling. And listening is selling also. And really, we want to be able to go out there and be able to share ideas. The idea being, you don't have to go out and spend millions of dollars on new technology. Maybe if you think about reframing your organization so that people and original organizations that might have silos, they can break down those silos and talk to each other. You know, maybe think about using information in new ways that becomes informational to different groups within an organization. These are ideas that don't take a lot of money but might be able to help you solve a problem that you have today. My name is Colin Gordon. I am a lead application engineer here at Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.